Okay, everybody, welcome. It's my turn this time. I can't see you. Ajay asked me to give a talk, and I thought, well, what can I talk about? By the way, I must come with all the usual things. If you don't understand my accent, please interrupt immediately, because I speak English with a rather London accent. If I speak too quickly, which I also do usually, interrupt me again. And if I use any word you don't understand, interrupt me again. So, anyway, that's like the usual. And so I'm used to giving talks, but I'm not used to giving talks to a group like this. Because giving talks is part of my work. But I've never given a talk like this to a group of spiritual seekers. So I wonder what I really know enough about that would sort of contribute anything. Because generally speaking, in my opinion, it's like an advantage to know what you're talking about. Not always. I mean, it can be fun if you're in the pub and you've got no idea, just everybody laughs. But anyway, I decided to talk about psychology and the spiritual path, or vice versa. And I'm a psychiatrist and psychotherapist, one of these dodgy professionals. I know quite a lot about psychology and psychiatry and psychotherapy, but the spiritual path, I've been on it a long time, but who knows? In psychiatry we use rating scales, like the anxiety rating scale and the depression rating scale. And I don't know how high I would rate on the... Oh, that was better, yeah, thanks. I don't know how high I would rate on the spiritual development rating scale, How long can you sort of sit there without thinking? How regularly do you meditate, etc.? Not so sure. Anyway, the other thing I know quite a lot about is politics, but I don't think that's probably what we're supposed to be talking about today. Yeah, so I'm a professional psychiatrist, and one thing about that is that I'm dodgy, but as we all know, but the other thing is I have patients. I mean, like people patients, not the patients like having patients. other professions have clients, but I have patients. So are there any objections to that? I mean, some people, they really, and I mean this seriously, some people, because I'll be referring to I'll be talking from my own experience and the experience of people I work with. And some people actually it gets their back up when you talk about patients. But anyway, I have patients. If there's no objections, I'll carry on talking like that. All right?
Patients?
A patient.
Client.
Huh? Like a client.
Okay.
Yeah. Patient. Yeah. Yeah.
But it implies that the person's sick.
Hey?
Doesn't a patient imply that the person's sick?
Yeah, I mean, here we go. Exactly.
just to help him understand it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I thought you were sort of having a go at me. Oh, no, okay. There you see how paranoid one gets. Okay, and so I thought this could... Now, this isn't a teaching, it's a talk. I don't give teachings. I leave those to the masters. And what I thought we could sort of... I'll just introduce the theme, and then we can sort of talk around it, maybe share experiences. But while I think about it, when it comes to sharing experiences, it's very important that we protect our personal space. I mean, this isn't like a group where there's like a pressure to have to, tell everything about yourself just because you want to illustrate a point. I look after my space, and everybody must honour and look after their space. So we'll see what comes out of it. And that is my, that's my genuine idea, that we just see what comes out of this. So the topic is holding on and letting go. That is, holding on and letting go both of attachment, like longing, desire, and rejection, like aversion or anger or hatred. Rather like in the centre of the Buddhist wheel of life. Like they have that, like the pig and the ignorant pig and the angry snake and the longing, the like the attached cockerel, and they're all sort of biting each other in the tail. Now, very often in meditation, different thoughts and feelings come up. Sometimes difficult ones. And the reason is that when we're meditating, our psychological defences go down. Just like when we're falling asleep, our defences go, our psychological defences go down, like the ego weakens, you might say. And actually the brain waves, if you measure the brain waves in sleep, in dreaming, not deep sleep, but in dreaming sleep, the brain waves, they're roughly the same as when you're in meditation. If you take one of these EEGs. You know, so a feeling might come up. And it may be, or something comes up. Now, it may be a feeling that you already know about. It just comes up stronger because you're in a kind of a, as I say, in a more open, less defended state. But also things can come up you don't really know about from before. And sometimes you get, sometimes there are things that happen. You get like a little, you can start feeling a bit restless or a bit bored or sleepy. Or sometimes even a vague anxiety sort of comes up. And that vague anxiety even has a name in psychiatry. It's called signal anxiety. It's warning the ego, watch out, there's something dangerous on the way up here, keep it down. Yeah, it's true, it's exactly what it's about, that signal anxiety. So, if we start going into these feelings, like, say, let's say you start feeling bored. If you start going into feeling bored, you might get a feeling of, you know, of what it's about. And last year here at the Satali, it was an open Dharma retreat. I nearly said seminar, I didn't even see. It was an open Dharma retreat, and it was suggested how one could work systematically with this kind of thing. And they used the mnemonic. Do you know the word? It's like a memory aid. Mnemonic. They used the memory aid. And the memory aid was RAIN. R-A-I-N. This is a typical kind of Buddhist way of working. Although, obviously, they must use it, I suppose, in other traditions. But typically, it's typical Buddhist. They're very systematic. So, R stands for recognize. That is, like, become aware of something coming up. But not only become aware of it, because you can sort of be aware of something and then ignore it. So you have to be aware of it, and then you have to acknowledge it. That's the A, R-A, acknowledge it. Yes, there is something there. And then the third one is the I in RAIN. Investigate it. Look into it. Go deeper into it. And finally, there's N. That means non-identify. Drop it. Let go. When you've investigated. This is a typical, as I say, sort of Buddhist way, kind of a psychological sort of meditation. And it works very, very well, and I can recommend it. I've parallel with going in therapy myself, I used to sit at home, well, I still do, and just sit and, you know, see what comes up and sort of look into it, kind of a, rather like this thing we were talking yesterday, kind of reflecting on things or sort of contemplating. You're not exactly thinking, but you're just letting it sort of go around like this. It's a very good way of doing self-exploration. It's a kind of a cleansing process. But all this touches upon some of the discussions we've been having. Also Yog Vashist, and it's interesting, it's in a kind of a nice synchronicity, you know, things happening at the same time. But it also raises a few questions. What are you laughing at down there? It also raises a few questions, because it's not always so easy. It can take a lot of bravery, a lot of guts, just to dare to recognise something. And then to acknowledge it, some painful feeling coming up you'd rather not know about, or some forbidden or guilt-laden impulse or desire or longing going up. You know, that can be pretty difficult. And then, not to mention, investigating it and finding out what it's all about. It's not always just a case of just doing it. And I'm not saying this applies here, but generally speaking, you know, and on the spiritual path, I think a little warning sometimes can come along. It's, you know, it's easy to be brave on somebody else's behalf.
John?
Yes?
I'm thinking about the investigation part, because when I meditate, like, I feel like I do recognise things.
Yeah.
I do acknowledge things. But I don't think I necessarily investigate.
Okay.
Like, I'm not sure what you mean by investigate.
Oh, I see.
To really consciously think about it and think, okay, I'm feeling this because that happened. And
yeah, but not exactly so much I'm feeling this because of that. That would be like the mental way of doing it, like the direct mental way. That's quite okay, you're sure. But very often it's just kind of dwelling upon it, as it were. Just letting it, just kind of floating around that sort of feeling and see what comes up. A bit more like that. But you can also, you know, think about it, but it's more, often more, trouble is if you just think about something, it's very easy to kind of fool yourself, and, oh yeah, I found the answer, drop it, you know. But if you let it kind of, just sort of be there for a while, and sort of investigate it in that sense.
What with, sorry John, with the energy, in a sense, the feeling, you talk about the sensation, or?
Yeah, it can be the feeling, you know, thoughts, energy, whatever, you know, not specifying at what kind of level, as it were. Just in general, it can be any one of those things. Yeah, you know, feeling in some kind of energy, kind of go into the energy, or some uncomfortable feeling, you know, it can be different levels, it can be thoughts, it can be anything, you know, like mind, feelings, energy, like body, you know, they're all kind of, they all go together, they're always there, all of them at the same time. As I say, it's easy to be brave on someone else's behalf, but it's, you know, for spiritual teachers and spiritual seekers, it's good to know about this, because I mean, say it does, it does raise a few questions. You know, it's not so easy sometimes to go into these difficult feelings. I mean, in the old days, when I was a boy, until I was a teenager, homosexuality in England, in Britain, was punishable by law. I mean, there wasn't just all the condemnation, all the bias, all that kind of stuff. It's actually punishable by law. You'd be put in prison, you know, and you've got this young boy, this young man, 18-year-old, getting strange feelings, and, you know, he's feeling he's not quite like all the others, etc., etc. You get the idea. And that can be pretty threatening. Or for an older person, for that matter. Yeah, okay, so we've talked about recognise, acknowledge, investigate, and then comes the non-identification part. You know, you looked at it, drop it. And this isn't always so easy either. Just to give a few examples, and these are either examples from my own personal experience or examples taken from patients I've had. Now, example one, a loving parent tragically loses her little daughter. They're crossing the road at the crossing, you know, the little on the crossing, the green man, the little child in her eagerness rushes a little bit ahead. The mother's in a rather, you know, inattentive moment, slips the child's hand, drops the child's, you know, not holding the child's hand tight enough. Bang, a car comes along. This happens. You know, can the parent just let go of this pain, this sorrow of losing their child? Can she just let go of it? Can she let go, just let go, drop, non-identify with her guilt? You know, the guilt because she wasn't holding the child's hand firm enough in that little inattentive moment. Or maybe her anger at the driver who's driving much too fast and jumped the traffic lights, for example. That's just one example. You get, you know, another one. A person who as a child were physically or sexually abused. Actually, you can't be sexually abused without also being physically abused, but you can be just physically abused. or psychologically abused, and it might have led to serious consequences for the rest of the life of this person. You know, really serious consequences. They never became what they really had the potential to become, or maybe a woman or a man never really was able to enjoy their sexual life because of this. I mean, this happens, we know it. You know, sometimes there's a, you know, so there can be hate, there can be shame, there can be guilt, because sometimes, it's particularly in the case of incest, sometimes that's the only loving attention, if you can call it loving attention, the little child ever received. So there can be total confusion. Again, can you just drop this, you know, not identify with it? Or you might have done something terribly bad. Maybe through carelessness, or maybe intentionally. And afterwards, you know, the poor person, they're being torn apart mentally by guilt and shame. Can they just let go of that? I mean, I've given now three extreme examples. Obviously, there are graduations. We get the general idea. So the question remains then, and it remains both in psychotherapy and in spirituality, what can we do? What to do? Maybe even after years of meditation, or maybe even after years of therapy, it's still there. And I thought a lot about this. You know, in psychiatry, you get the insights. They're not just mental. There are many ways of arriving at insights in psychotherapy. The insights come. There are many ways of working with the insights, and the process is called working through. You've had the basic insight. You work through it. You see how it's affected, how it spreads itself into different areas in your life, and maybe you go deeper into it, etc., etc. This is called working through. But sometimes after years of working through, the problem's still there, the pain is still there, whatever. And it's no good, you know, telling them, oh, well, you know, you'll get over it, or if only you did this or thought like this, it'll go away. You know, I mean, so what can we do? Well, one thing is a little genuine, obvious, I mean, this is obvious to you people, but I'll say, just for the discussion's sake, a little genuine sympathy and compassion wouldn't help. Wouldn't hurt, I mean, sorry, wouldn't hurt. You know, feel, you know, just feeling with the person. Because sometimes one just has to acknowledge that something has happened. The feeling is just there. And you can't do any more about it. Just have to accept that. You just can't get over it. A wise old therapist teacher of mine, a psychotherapy teacher, he's an interesting man. He does a lot of so-called transpersonal psychotherapy. Maybe that's another whole field. But, you know, when actually you're seeing, not just like the, as it were, the egoic level, but at the higher levels as well, combining it, or he was also doing shamanic work. He'd also lost a child himself under tragic circumstances. He suggested the phrase, just let it be, because there's nothing else you can do. Yeah.
Is it, would it be possible to focus on just acceptance? I made a mistake. I'm a human being. Let go of the child's hand in the traffic situation. I mean, you know, we do a lot of that in our meditation, or at least I do. And then loving kindness, you know, directed toward self, loving kindness just directed toward what happened. I mean, is that an option, or...?
It could be for some people. People vary. It could work for some. But there are others, I mean, you know, just the however you try to do it, just the loving kindness, I mean, what's that, you know? Mm-hmm. It could just, work.
Just, I mean, accepting, you know, this happened, I did it, I didn't do it on purpose, I'm still a good person.
But the problem is,
I don't know, that's it, that just kind of thought.
Yeah, sure, and it's a good thought, but I don't know either. I mean, I just do not know. Let me just, a couple more sentences, and then we come back to that kind of thing. Because this idea, just let it be, because there's nothing else you can do. And this is from my own personal experience I'm talking, and from the experience of others, of patients, it does make sense. And maybe it can help. Who knows? So actually, the title of this talk, it could have been Holding On, Letting Go, and Letting Be. But then that wouldn't, you know, that would have been the end of the talk, as it were, because that's really all there is to say. We come back to what you were saying. I just finished with one or two things. It's interesting, I think, because we can relate this, as we've said, to Jorg Vachist. And maybe in early times, in the old days, you know, thousands of years ago, maybe life was psychologically simpler. You know, they talk about, like, the golden age and the noble savage and et cetera, you know, Rousseau and so on. Maybe there wasn't incest and child abuse. I don't know. I don't know. We wouldn't. Maybe life was simpler. And it was normal in the old days for children to die. I mean, it's normal until about not so long ago, 100 years ago. I mean, it was normal that, you know, the family that had 10 kids to die. It was normal. So, you know, the idea of children dying was more normal, maybe. I don't know. But maybe life today is more psychologically complicated. Maybe that's why sometimes we do need not just meditation, but psychotherapy, in my opinion. You know, or people use psychotherapy, they're in like different culture, or people get into alcohol or drugs or cigarettes or whatever. And then, of course, you have this kind of, like you were talking about the other day, it's called, as it were, the culture of psychotherapy. But, yeah, well, that's really what I had to say. So, yeah, like Lenny's suggesting, just sort of acknowledge it and accept it. Not acknowledge and accept it in the sense just accept it, it's okay that it happened, but accept that it did happen.
Or accept yourself, myself.
Yeah, but that's the problem. Sometimes the problem is they can't accept themselves. You see, the problem might be if a person is torn apart by shame and guilt. Shame is exactly that you cannot accept yourself. That's what shame means. It's shame is like a personal thing. Like guilt, I've done something wrong and I got a bad conscience, you know, and you're torturing conscience. But shame is a kind of a self-rejection. One's rejecting oneself, one is ashamed of oneself.
Yeah, you know, an interesting sideline in regard to this is that, we can check with Ajay maybe, is that in the Asian culture in the East, people don't tend to have the same guilt feelings about things that we do in the West.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting question to me. You know, if I'm feeling guilty about something, and then my Indian friend right next to me feels no guilt at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
there are obviously,
that's nice. I mean,
there are cultural differences. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure. It can go the other way. I was at the Osho Commune, that's the first time I came to India, and there, the Indians, and the Japanese weren't allowed to partake in the therapy groups. You know, the Osho commune in Pune, it's full of therapy groups. And the Indians, the Japanese, weren't allowed to partake. Because, you know, if they start getting into suddenly wanting to criticise, having bad feelings towards their mother and father, I don't know if this is true, but I've heard in the Japanese culture, you know, that can lead to a person becoming suicidal. I've heard. I don't know if it's true. But anyway, you know, these things are cultural. Well, yeah, sure, one thing's the guilt and the shame. Somehow try to accept yourself. We're all human. We all make mistakes. I mean, I'm a doctor and I've made mistakes. You know, it's almost impossible to be a doctor without making mistakes. The trouble about being a doctor and making mistakes is they often have very serious consequences. It's just the nature of the job. You know, that's not the only. I mean, a lot of people have sort of jobs if you make them, like a bus driver or whatever, you know. Not just doctors. But what about some of these other feelings? The rage, the hatred, the guilt. I mean, hatred is actually a very negative feeling. It's a very destructive. It destroys the self. Hatred. And, you know, but it's not so easy for some people to let go of that either. So, personally, I just get stuck with it. Sometimes you just have to let it be and see what happens.
What happens in the mind or the brain, or is there anything, any particular thing that happens to the brain or the mind when one does let go? Any change?
Yeah, when every single psychological state has an energetic and a bodily correlate, they go together. All three are always together. So yeah, things happen in the brain, things happen in the mind, things happen with the energy, things happen in the body. Yeah, sure. Always.
You know, from a psychiatric perspective, that it's so hard to let go. I mean, are we afraid of what will happen, or that somebody will take advantage of us if we let go, or what? Is there any? And maybe there's no answer to this, but you know.
Well, if you're really, really angry at somebody, it's not so easy just to let go. A justified anger, it's not easy. It's not easy to let go. I mean, it's no sort of, it just isn't. You know, it's so strong, and it's part of us. Yeah.
Can I say something?
Yeah, please, everybody, you know, please just throw in your, because I've got no answers.
I heard that sometimes, John, you can tell me if I'm really wrong. Maybe, for example, we're in a situation. Let's say I'm a child and I'm in a violent atmosphere in my family, for example. Then maybe I develop certain kind of strategies or certain ways of being, ways of behaving to enable me to actually survive in this situation. Maybe I need to be very protecting of myself. Maybe I need to be very cold or whatever, but somehow adapting to that situation. Not thinking about it, but just naturally as an organism adapts to its environment. And then this kind of way of being or behaving, maybe generally or maybe specific to that kind of type of situations, that kind of gets laid down as a kind of pattern.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then even if years later, the situation itself is finished.
Mm.
And there's one might be in a very kind, loving environment with very nice people, and that might be decades ago, but the pattern that was laid down may still be there and may still be either on all the time, or it could be the type where it's activated when certain kind of flavors of situation arise. Then all this behavior pattern kind of one gets into that again. But this time it doesn't actually have its function. It's kind of, it might be the case that it's actually useless in this situation, but it's not a logical choice. So, well, then you have the whole other difference.
Yeah, but I mean, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, how to get out of it. But this takes us back to, like, you know, you have to go into it and work through it. But no, it takes us back to that. But the point is, and this is where, in fact, you know, a good professional has to know what he's doing. Sometimes you have to leave well alone. There are some people who they have difficulties in going into deep personal relationships. Because they were betrayed, because they were... I've worked all my life in Norway. They were betrayed in some sense or another at a very early age. And so they don't trust at a deep level, because if you go into a personal relationships, they kind of open us up. And that person doesn't dare to open up again. So maybe they never really managed to go into a deep personal relationship. Or they maybe have this repetitive pattern. A man, he meets a lovely woman, he falls in love, and then he pulls her away out after 3 months. And then 6 months later, the same thing happens, and on and on again. And so you can maybe help this person work through this, see the roots of it, why he cannot go into an ongoing relationship with a woman. Or it can be the other way around, a woman in relation to a man. But at other times, it's best to leave well alone. Because if you start uncovering, you're going to open up for more than that person can cope with.
So don't you think in that kind of situation, the relationship with the therapist is really, really useful?
Well, in psychotherapy, by and large, the relationship with the therapist is where all the work's done.
Yeah.
Well, it's not so simple. There are sort of three aspects. You've got the relationship to the what's happening in your daily life today, in your relationship with people in life out there. You've got your relationship to all the internalized relationships. You know, internalized means what you've taken inside you, the relationship you have as a child to your parents. That's kind of, it's an inner relationship. And then this all plays out in the relationship to the therapist. So in therapy, you're often moving around this triangle. And that is what, you know, good therapy is about. But also, good therapy is about knowing when in Norwegian we have an expression, keep your fingers off the plate. You know, don't be so ambitious a therapist, I'm going to cure and everything. Because, you, as I say, you might open up for more than the patient can cope with. You know, I've seen this happen because it's not so difficult. It's not so difficult with the use of powerful techniques for some people to open up for the unconscious, kind of stuff starts coming up. But then the poor person's sitting there, you know. Some therapists are very good at this, like gestalt therapy, or other very powerful way, being totally in the how, here and now, all the time. That's gestalt therapy. You know, it can go very fast and very quickly get into something, but the person may not be able to stand it. Psychoanalysis, they used to have an expression. People were so-called falling apart on the couch. You know, in psychotherapy, the psychoanalyst, he sits, in psychoanalysis, I mean, the psychoanalyst sits here and the patient's sitting there, you know, can't really see the therapist, and so not really getting any feedback, you know, so the therapist becomes like a mirror for all the projections. And it goes on, it gets worse and worse, and the poor person just falls apart. They can't cope with it. in. So you have to know what you're dealing with, you know, when to leave well alone. Other people, you know, they, if they're prepared to do the work and you're prepared to stick with them, yeah, they can do it. And a very important part of the work is, in fact, the relationship to the therapist, certainly. Yeah.
Can I say in relation to meditation, you were saying, let's say someone is in a relationship and then they can't open properly, then they totally close off and end the relationship,
mm-hmm.
then maybe start another one. The image that I had when you're saying this is like kind of opening and closing and opening,
mm-hmm.
never opening very much, but and my idea with a therapist is that hopefully, you know, if it's a good relationship, even though there's this opening and closing happening, but there's hopefully a continuous openness at some level towards the, or in the relationship with the therapist, that can kind of keep a beam of awareness continuously through the process, maybe sometimes less, sometimes more, but in contrast to some meditators, I think some people maybe meditate very much for many years, but at the same time just opening, closing to their external problems and maybe continuing.
But the answer is still the same. Oh, sorry, you weren't finished.
Yeah, continuing to be, what's the polite way of saying, mental.
Yeah.
You know, some people are really crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or getting really angry over nothing.
Yeah.
But they've been in the Dharma for 40 years or something, you know. So,
Well, maybe that's what they were, sorry.
Well, I mean, I think they're missing something, you know.
Yeah, but maybe it's a good thing.
Maybe not.
No, but what I'm saying is, for some people, yeah, for some people they can be fooling themselves and they actually could do more work, but for other people, again, it's a good thing that they're not going into this. You talked about in the therapeutic relationship. Sure, but the therapist has to know when to hold off, because some people, if they open up for their neediness, you know, I mean, you can't have them sitting on your lap for the rest of their life.
No, no, but what I mean
and
is
so then you mustn't open up. You must keep them a little bit at a distance.
Of course the therapist has to do a good job. But let's say if there's a good therapist available, then my sense is that someone who's really serious for Dharma practice, I think some of these people can really benefit from having this type of relationship in addition.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Because otherwise some huge mountains of their blockages or whatever you want to call it can be totally overlooked, maybe forever.
Mm. That is one of the tricky things about But you're absolutely right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Jack Kornfield, you know, the insight meditation master, teacher in America. He's also a psychologist. He writes a lot about this. But it's absolutely true, because one of the problems is we can fool ourselves. And you can fool yourselves totally if you're just working on your own. I'm not saying always this happens. A lot of people do a really lot of good. Most people probably. Really, you know, lucky enough to be able to work on their own. But some people, they can be fooling themselves. They're sort of getting, they're not really seeing everything, and you can only really see everything, or not everything, but you can only often see the other side with the help of somebody outside. You can't really see what you're doing on your own. In extreme cases, there's a defense mechanism. One thing is we have a defense mechanism if you've got a fairly strong self or ego, as I say, where you sort of suppress things, you hold it down because the ego is strong enough to do that. That can be fair enough. But there's another defense mechanism when we were, often from when we're very small. Or maybe there's some kind of fault in the hardware. Because there are sometimes. And so then the self adopts another way of defending itself, and that is to dissociate. Mm. And so one's only in touch with half of oneself. You know, and you can sort of meditate away and sort of find out a lot about yourself, or go in therapy and find, you know, this kind of therapy, like some kind of gestalt therapist. They can work with people, because the whole idea of gestalt therapy is that it's the patient or the client, they would probably say, himself, herself, who you just follow the client, help them be in the here and now, be in the here and now, be in the here and now, see what comes up, see what comes up, see what comes up. And it sounds very good, and it can be a very good, effective technique. I use it a lot. But it doesn't always work, because they may miss both the patient or the client and the therapist are totally missing, you know, the half that isn't being looked at, because the therapist has an ideology that the patient always knows best. And there are times when, you know, you want the perspective from the outside, not just your own perspective on what's going on.
John, do you believe that your spiritual teacher can offer this to you, or is it your opinion for some people that clinical kind of therapy is needed alongside?
Did you say chemical therapy?
Clinical
therapy, sorry, I thought you said... Well, no, that's no joke. No. Because chemical therapy can be absolutely necessary. Absolutely. That's another. But even if you did, you could also be right. Yeah, no, in relation to the spiritual teacher, the master, it all sorts of funny things can come up. Ajay can probably say obviously a lot more about this than me. But I have seen the same kind of, in the end, the seeker is using the teacher. In psychotherapy, we talk about transference. You transfer some longing or other, which was originally a longing for your father who rejected you. So you transfer this longing onto the teacher. And you actually sometimes see that people, in a sense, I don't know if you would agree, Ajay, sometimes people are asking you to kind of sort their life out for them, you know, or they're idolizing you in the wrong kind of way. And particularly if you're one of these sort of gurus, not like Ajay, who says, just see me as a human, but I mean, if you're one of the gurus who doesn't want to be seen as human, you know, and I mean, perfect projection for all your longings for a good father. And I've seen it happen, actually. I've seen it happen in Open Dharma once. I won't say, obviously, with who, and I won't say who the teacher was, and I won't say who the seeker was. But being, you know, me, I was sitting there, and I thought, blimey, this bloke has gone into a regression in relation to the teacher. And it was so... The guy was completely regressed, and, you know, or the woman. And it was completely a bit late to kind of backtrack in that kind of in the because we're trying to be confidential. But anyway, it was obvious. It was obvious. I mean, the whole person, he just was a baby. So yeah. So who asked the question, by the way? You, wasn't it? Yeah, absolutely. So, I think also, I think a teacher or a master has to be, hopefully, aware of this. I have a master, I have a Tibetan master, and he wrote about this once, because they have, our group has a newspaper that comes out, and he wrote about it once. He says he gets the most incredible emails from people who are wanting them to sort out everything for him. And he says, this is not my function. He's quite straight and clear. This is not my function. He says, I just put, a 10-page, 2-page email. He says, I'm not here to clear up their rubbish. To put it, you know, he says, I just put it on one side.
So skilled or spiritual teacher will guide
them? Well, guide that person, but that's all, what do we mean by guide somebody? Yeah. Say what to them?
Whether it's about attachment or whether it's, you know, would, I don't know, what am I trying to say? Would they be able to say to the person who's seeking the advice or spiritual guidance when it's maybe not their healthiest relationship, like what you were just
talking about? Yeah, I'm listening. But you think maybe the teacher could point out to the seeker that it seems to me you sort of want me as a good father or something like that, you mean?
Yeah, in your experience, it's going back to the question about whether a good spiritual teacher, and whether you need alongside that.
Well, you may do. If the teacher is an aware person who understands these things, understands, the psychology of the path, not just the path, but the psychology of the path, he can maybe, hopefully, would see that this person's getting into this kind of relationship with me, and it's not healthy, and this isn't my function. I can't help this person in that way, because if he does try to start being helpful, then you can just increase the dependency and just increase the and so the whole process starts, and then like it or not, you're kind of ending up in a kind of a therapy situation. So maybe a teacher in that situation say, yeah, look, I see, you're kind of having this problem, but have you ever thought about getting professional help? Something like that, saying that kind of way. Not saying you need the therapist, but, sort of suggest to the person. Let's ask a Jane. Sorry. Exactly.
Clinical psychiatry. Kind of, clinical psychiatry will be useful, I would say, there is not one answer, because it's, sometimes it will be, somebody, seeking personal, seeking father in teacher, and maybe giving that feeling seems helpful, for a while, so that something else can be said, it's not, it's like we say that, it's very easy to say everything direct, but actually, when you really, really feel the situation, I think it's not very easy to say everything, at one time, So probably, every situation will be different, every time one really has to feel, what feels more appropriate, to really continue this relation or stop this relation. And I think, that will come, every time, from the feeling.
Yeah. It could be very useful.
Sometimes it's very useful. Because, if relationship is not little grown, it will be really difficult to hear. What also happens, when we grow a relation, between, it's easy to hear, what I say. And if relationship is not grown, it's difficult to hear. So somehow, sometimes it's helpful to let it grow. Little bit, knowingly, not because also this can happen that, I might be having juice out of that relation as a teacher. And that is I think strictly prohibited. As a teacher, I should not have any juice in this relationship.
Then what do you do if you're getting some juice? Then what to do?
Then I think, you know, just send this person away from you. Okay. Kind of, you know, sometimes that might happen.
Yeah.
That, you know, there is like a personal juice.
Yeah.
So it will be helpful to send this person away to somebody else.
And exactly the same applies in psychotherapy. You know, somebody else has to do the work. But I think, Ajay, you said the point very well. That is that there's no one answer.
Yeah,
it depends on the situation.
Yeah, yeah. It's like every time. You know, like also, like, you know, this with this acceptance, you know, like, you know, let it be. Like, you know, like sometimes, you know, it's difficult to let it be, you know, because it's like the wounds are so already scratched. So we really should give some time so that they have little, you know, and then, you know, then say, ah, let it be. Kind of, it's never, it's very difficult to answer like one thing, you know, to everyone or to even one person in all situation, you know. Like,
absolutely.
Even one person, you know, answer will be different in different times. So somehow I think, you know, kind of, you know, that has to be considered. And also, like with this, there was like a, you raised a question about meditators, you know? And I think it's really good question, because like there is a state of, you know, meditation, like static state of meditation. I say, you know, kind of. I think I'm using for the first time this word also. But static state of meditation means not allowing yourself to go deeper in you, but kind of like balancing yourself, you know. There will be difficulty, and for the difficulty, you are also creating, like, you know, positive force. So difficulty and positive force, they stay in a static state. Nothing happens, but kind of like you feel good because the difficulty is not coming. You know, somehow you are not allowing difficulty to come. So those kind of people, you know, they can continue meditating 40 years, 50 years without happening anything. So somewhere, you know, like we really have to look that we are not doing this static state of meditation, you know, because from that, nothing comes.
So in that kind of situation, if they had a chance to have a good therapist, this could be good. Yeah?
Very, very helpful. Yeah. Or, you know, somebody say that, you know, you really have to sometimes disbalance, you know, like somebody says in a loving way, sometimes you have to let this balance fall, you know. You know, it could go wrong way, but still falling from the balance will be more helpful than maintaining.
I have a comment to
please.
Ajay, and that is, unfortunately, for some people, it is in fact best that nothing happens. For some people, we can't generalize.
So suddenly,
some people, their problem may be such that it's best they don't open up for it.
Yeah.
And maybe being a meditator for 50 years, in fact, is what has kept them going through life. You know, they're identified with being a meditator, and good for them. For some people.
Yeah, for some people it could be.
Could be.
Yeah.
You know, there's no one answer.
Yeah.
Don't you think that, like, if they need it to stay like this, that even if the teacher will say, like, look, they will find a way to avoid looking anyway?
Maybe, or maybe they will start looking and get into trouble.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a lot of experience and wisdom, and this is what I liked about Ajay right from the start. He said one thing is to be realized, or, you know, that enlightenment, realizations happen. Another thing is to be a master. As I understand it, some people become realized and they can't wait to become masters, as I've understood it. Whereas Ajay kind of hung around for a long while, didn't you? You waited.
Yeah. You know, actually, kind of, you know, like, like, you know, according to my kind of knowing, you know, like I was knowing that what I have to offer, everybody knows, kind of like somewhere, you know, I have this like a, you know, like I thought everybody knew it. And then what happened that like one day, like one of my friends, you know, because we were talking, you know, like with friends, talking, and I was kind of, you know, saying what felt right. And somehow some people could really recognize something in me. So then one day, one friend asked me to, like, you know, translate like one of the sloka of Yog Vasishtha. And fortunately, like, I was in his library, and he has like 42 translations of the, like, the same Yog Vasishtha, like 42 different translations. And he asked me to translate, and then I translate. And he, because he kind of like, he has read all 42, so he really jumped out of his chair, you know, like really jumped, you know. He said, wow, you know, like none of these people say what you say, you know. Mm-hmm. And without this, there is no meaning to this, you know. Mm-hmm. And he really pulled all 42, you know, mm-hmm. books and showed me. And nobody really pointed out that point. And then I recognized, I could be helpful, you know. Like, this is the day when I recognized, maybe I am a helpful guy, kind of, you know, little bit. And this is how, like, this, like, and then, you know, Nadia Ji, who was here, she really encouraged me to kind of translate other things, you know. So this is how, somehow, it happened, you know. Mm-hmm. So, kind of, yeah.
Well, Ajay, you go through different phases or different things, because I've known you for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
like now, at this retreat,
mm-hmm.
at this time,
mm-hmm.
We're focusing on yoga, which is And I mean, to me, it's an extremely, I mean, it's almost a how to become enlightened book, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it's very deep and very moving.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wondered, you know. Before, you know, you talked about, you talked about the Bhagavad Gita, you
mm-hmm.
talked about,
yeah.
Different stories in the Puranas,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, one particular female, I forget.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I was wondering, do you kind of go through different phases, or do you feel that sometimes, or just allow yourself to be led to as to what document you're going to be using to present, you know, to
students.
Does that just happen?
Yeah, it just like kind of like more happens, you know. Mm-hmm. Kind of, I bring, you know, 3-4 books, you know. Like when I come to retreat, I bring 3-4 books without knowing which I am going to use. And then, you know, somehow, when I have to use, you know, I get a feeling that, you know, I might use this book. So it's like, it's something,
did
you know.
You see them as kind of all equal, teaching lessons?
Yeah, different things, you know, but, you know, just something kind of, you know, I get feeling, you know, I can say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
John, can I ask you something?
Yeah, please.
Somehow, reading through accounts of people who woke up, they often are psychologically totally fucked up, kind of. Yes?
After or before they've...
Before.
Before, yeah.
Before.
Yeah.
And still, they woke up. Question is,
yes.
In your understanding, do you think you have to be psychologically healed to wake up?
Oy, oy, oy.
Because I don't think so, but...
Well, it is true what you say, but I think probably there are exceptions. But, I mean, if they become realized, then okay. I mean, they are one of the exceptions.
Yeah, I mean, they're not so many who are realized.
No, but a Tibetan teacher I have had an uncle who was apparently quite mad. And he eventually became enlightened, and they didn't have any psychotherapists around in Tibet at that time. I'd like to but just mention...
Sorry,
did you have any more?
When I read about people, what they were going through before they woke up, the pressure of their psychological structure was so tough that through that pressure, awakening happened, the realization that this is not who I am.
What, the pressure on their psychological structure?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And through this... something could break down.
It's rather like, you know, if you're here, can you go to the top of the mountain? If you're here, you know, where there's a deep valley between you and the top of the mountain you want to get to. Some people do seem to be able to make the jump. Other people have to go down the valley, down like the, and then get up and then go up. So again, there's never any one answer.
But there is hope for all of us.
There's hope for all of us.
Yeah, this is like hope. This is common, you know.
But I think so.
Yeah.
I just like this.
No matter how.
Yeah.
See,
sorry, where are we?
Yeah.
Yes, please. Yeah. I'd like to say first, from my own experience, how it's helped me.
Yeah, I'm interested in that.
Yeah, because it's exactly the same question, actually. And that is, it gave me the ability to kind of just stay with it. Just keep on looking, keep on looking, keep on looking. Because I was lucky enough to be the sort of person who could do that fairly early on. But I also got into a lot of difficulties, and I think two things then here. One was experience of my own difficulties gave me an understanding of where other people could be having problems and help in that sense. That's at the psychological level. But certainly at the more spiritual level, you don't sort of sit there like a kind of a Buddha and, you know, but there is having this sort of what we call in psychology a transpersonal perspective. Transpersonal means sort of beyond the person. In other words, a spiritual perspective, if you like. It does give you an ability, it helps you to maybe see a bit more. You know, all the emphasis on compassion that we have on the path, I think, can be very helpful, and sometimes can see things in a bigger framework. And the other thing is that can help is that sometimes you don't feel so much you have to find the answer. The answer sort of comes. My wife is also, she's a psychotherapist, and she's very good at this. We're different, my wife and I. I'm much more mental, intellectual, and use that in therapy. I mean, I use it, definitely, you know, I bang, sometimes boom, boom, you know, understand this kind of thing. But my wife is different. And it's something, you know, and I'm not saying I don't do it all the time, but when, you know, I can do it and it can work, you know. But my wife has a different, she does that as well, but her emphasis is very often she just sits there and she just suddenly says something. And it helps. She said, I've got no idea. I sit there, you know, and I suddenly just say something. And it helps. But that thing, you know, she does it. But I can, you know, sometimes I also do that. I just say something or make a silly, make a joke. Or kind of, you know, like, because you can just see the paradox or something. And, I won't be too personal, but I just said once to, like, somebody, you know, you know, you're just taking yourself to, you know, this person was so much kind of guilt and everything. I said something like, can't remember exactly what it was, but I said something, you're just feeling, you know, so guilt-laden. I said, look, you're just, And it went on for years, and we had to work through it. So, I mean, it wouldn't have been an appropriate thing to say much earlier on. So timing is very, very important, timing. But I just, it just came out of me. You're just, you know, just you're just feeling sorry for yourself all the time. No? And that was enough to change the perspective. So sometimes this change the perspective. And that is something that comes very much, I think, from maybe having done a lot of, like, spiritual work as well, that we sort of see things from different perspectives. You can very quickly shift perspective.
I'm just wondering, are you finished?
Did you have...
I did have another question.
Yeah? Well, one can't do everything, but life's too short. But my overall philosophy is that our being, at least when we're here on Earth in the body, we have three levels: the mental, the energetic, and the physical body. And a really good therapy is working at all three levels, sometimes in parallel, sometimes more one, sometimes more the other. But so, you know, a successful, good therapy with, like, a patient who's able to work that way, you know, work at all three levels at once. So I trained like in psychoanalytic therapy and body therapy and energy therapy and different stuff, you know, to get a kind of a nice spectrum to work on. Because that, you know, like, as they say in Buddhism, in Tibetan Buddhism, we have body, speech, energy, leads into feelings, you know, and then mind, and we work at all three levels and try to integrate the whole time. Was that a good enough answer?
Yeah.
Did it sort of give an understanding? Some people work very much like you have this thing called cognitive therapy, and they just, you know, just sort out your thoughts and everything else will be okay. It works sometimes, it's quite effective, it's quite short. So, you know, again, it varies so much what's good. But these very hefty energetic therapies and bodywork therapies, one has to be careful, one has to know what one's doing, because they can precisely open up for stuff that people can't, the mind can't cope with. Okay. Yeah, the time's going on. Can we? Is it all right?
Please,
Yes, please.
You were saying that there's quite some people in meditation who would benefit from, like, professional help, and I just want to ask, if you don't see it, how are you supposed to know if you need it or not?
Well, if
you think that you're working through stuff, but you're not seeing a whole other side, then how are you supposed to know?
I see. Yeah.
Whether that would be useful
or not. Yeah, well, if you're totally unaware that you've got some problem that really you need to look at, you mean?
Well, I mean, I think most people have certain issues they're working with, so, like, to what degree, I mean, how serious does it have to be before you yourself would say, maybe I need, should I just continue meditating and somehow it will work out, like...
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think I know what you mean. There's really no one answer. It always, every single time, it depends on the context and the total situation. I mean, you know, we don't have to sort out all our problems. You know, I mean, you're allowed to die with, or maybe even be enlightened with, a few problems. You don't have to sort out everything. It's more a question as if they're either you realise that they're kind of, you consciously realize this is becoming a hindrance to me on the path, or like Ajay's answer when he sees someone stuck, you know. Ajay, maybe, as I understood, will work a little bit in some way with the person himself, or maybe suggest that something else is needed, or maybe leave well alone again. So there's sort of no one answer. I'm sorry it's also vague in a sense, but that is the nature of the beast, as it were, that we can't there isn't always, you know, there's not really one answer to every, you know, to every situation. But certainly for some people, I think it's right. I mean, if the person's really getting into trouble without really understanding it themselves, and they just carry on meditating and they're getting into more and more trouble, if that's happening, I then feel that it's the duty of a teacher to say, well, maybe you've got something going here that you ought to look at more, and, you know, perhaps you need professional help, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, does that sound okay?
Can I add something in response to that from my own experience? I did a year's foundation training for a kind of Buddhist psychotherapy in England. It's very, very experiential, very, very good. And as a part of the course, we had to be in therapy ourselves. So, you know, I was going to my first therapy session. I'd never had therapy before. And I know, I guess it's common in the United States, but my impression, because I'm from England, and then in England, my impression of psychotherapy was really it's either for mental people or for Americans, basically. An overlapping category.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thought, well, okay, I have to be in therapy for my training, that's fine. Actually, I don't need it at all, but, you know, as part of my training, you know, I'll go along with it. So I'm coming and I'm saying to the therapist, you know, I don't really need this, but, you know, I have to be in therapy for my training. And I really felt like I got through, like, all the difficult, crazy stuff through life experiences and really being dedicated to the path and working through things. I really felt like I'd got through so much. And there was nothing that I could see that needed any heavy work, really. There was no real issues. Of course, there's a million miles of path still to go, but on that level, I really didn't know that there was anything. And there was so much. Really. It was so, so good. Really, really helped me. And I could, if I had the opportunity, I would do more. Very, very beneficial to be. Actually, the first therapist was not good, and I changed. That was, so I also understand it's really necessary to be with a good therapist, not just any old one. But when I was with a good one, it gave me so much benefit and worked so well together with I won't say together with the path, because actually they weren't different. I'll say together with the rest of the path. So that's just my own experience.
So are you saying, like, you thought when you went at first there was nothing, you thought, and then a lot, like, he managed to bring stuff up or show you that there was
things? Yeah, that kind of therapy is, you're not searching for anything. It's very, very just staying present with whatever is arising. It's totally non-analytical. But being in the relationship with the person who was very, very loving and very, very holding the space so well that things can arise, and having the skill to help enable me to go in with presence into these things which were arising, which may have been very much on the edge, but letting the awareness deepen into those things in that very, very secure space, which is very essential, and letting awareness work its work, you know, letting the things unfold. Maybe there are deeper levels underneath, but it's really just helping enable awareness to be shown on all those corners, on everything that's there. Yeah, so very helpful.
Hmm. Sounds like a good therapy and a good therapist.
Yeah, I think so.
Hmm.
I mean, with the body work and the energetic type stuff, I don't know if it's true or not, but I read a while ago about trauma. I was reading that with animals, say an animal like a deer gets chased by a lion or something, and it gets away, then it supposedly the animal will stand there and just shake and shake for however long, and that's releasing all the adrenaline and all the stress and all the tension, and then that's gone, and then they just go off and it's
gone.
But do we have any mechanism in us like that?
And there are there are forms of therapy where you work with trauma, where they do exactly that.
But does it happen automatically at the time, like an animal? Do we have something like that? I mean, I know there's maybe something like shock, but you know, the animal just naturally just does it.
Interesting. Yeah.
Do we do anything?
Well, maybe. I mean, I guess so. You know, like if you've been in a really dangerous situation with a car, for example. You know, that's another thing. One thing is we have our defense mechanisms, but the other thing is so we don't know what's going on. That's the whole point of them. We're not supposed to know what's going on. They're like secret police. I mean, if you know how your secret police is working, then they're no longer be the secret police. And it's exactly the same thing with So we have the defense mechanisms, but we also have what they call like coping mechanisms, how we can cope with the situation. If you're driving the car and you suddenly get into a nasty skid on a wet road, you're nearly hitting a great lorry coming towards you on a bend, it's no point in going into your feelings. You know, you've got to sort the situation out and totally hold back, you know, have all your fear. Then afterwards you can sit there and you're shaking like a leaf.
Yeah. But
If you've ever had a dog, you know, they don't, animals don't, you know, a dog can be frightened for life. We had a dog once, poor old thing. He jumped into the back of the car and we put the back, you know, we had a station wagon, we closed the door too quickly and banged him really hard on the tail. And it was every time we were going on holiday, we had to almost lift the poor old dog, and he weighed about 50 kilos, we had to lift him into the back of the car. You know, so, but it's very interesting what you're saying. I don't really know. One thing is, we're geared for, like, you know, fighting, to fight or fright. A fight or flight, they always say. The adrenaline comes up, either you run away or you fight. So it's flight or fight. Some animals have a defense mechanism. They just freeze. Like rabbits, apparently. If they're chased by a fox, a rabbit just freezes. And sometimes that will save them, because maybe the fox thinks they're dead or something. I don't know, but then they leave them alone. But then, rabbits don't go in therapy. But if you psychologized about it, you know, you could think, maybe, you know, we freeze and there is all this stuff frozen there, and, you know, loosen it up. Because there is definitely this form of therapy where they help the patient to sort of get into this shaking in a secure situation. So I think absolutely there's something there.
John?
I think it was Eric first. Ajay, you say when it's time, will you?
No, I think we're just finishing. I think we just finished, it's interesting talk.
We're finished? Yeah, well, okay. Please, Eric. I'm sorry, I'm holding my hand like this because you've got the light right behind you. I can't see you at all.
All right.
Oh, that's better. Thank you.
So I had a motorbike accident in Thailand once. And, of course, it was very strong presence then at that situation. I could really see 3, 2, 1 to happen.
Yeah.
So actually, I was completely aware and was really with, you know, only T-shirt and then overcoat and really blood or whatever. I had no pain at all.
No.
what's going on with my friend, yeah. and so on. And then later, exactly that happened.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
35 degrees. I went to hospital,
yeah.
freezing, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And after that, I never had any problems anymore, also with motorbike. Mm. Some people said you have to go back immediately,
mm-hmm.
otherwise mm. you get
mm.
never that.
Mm.
So for me, it's completely different. I have more issues with it, with the thing when it's somehow repetitive,
yeah.
coming in,
yeah.
coming in again, mm. again, again. And it's too much, and then one
mm.
getting into this kind of defense
mm.
mechanism,
mm.
what's building up slowly, slowly,
yeah.
and then with your ego, this,
yeah.
and then
yeah.
something, you know,
yeah.
some incident happened, then this box is open.
Yeah,
up.
Mm.
That's something different. But with one event,
yeah.
normally, then for me, I had these things, and then this natural, or
yeah.
I don't know,
yeah.
and then that was gone.
That yeah.
was
not an issue
yeah. for me. So that, in that kind of sense,
yeah.
this animal instinct is still
yeah.
working.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
the other thing, when it's repeated
yeah.
for years,
yeah. yeah.
it's always, 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 always
yeah.
abuse or whatever.
Yeah.
Then it's really tricky for
yeah.
me. It's
yeah.
really
I think you're absolutely right.
Then there's never this feeling like,
no.
you know, I can shake it.
No, 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 no. Mm. No, I think that's absolutely correct what you're saying. You know, if you're kind of relatively well together, we're suddenly in a physical threatening situation, throw it off like you're saying, which is something different than a little five-year-old who's in a threatening situation, you know, it totally overwhelms, you know, the whole self-structure breaks down. It's something entirely different. So, yeah. Because, is that like...
Yeah,
that was obvious. Yeah, but thank yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that illustrates very well the difference between when we're subject to something as a relatively intact adult and we can sort of cope with it, and, you know, all this often repetitive stuff that comes from childhood, usually. And then there was...
I'd like to pick up on what Justin was just talking about going through quite a lot of therapy as part of his course on Buddhism and psychotherapy, and also on what Petra mentioned earlier about really fucked up people suddenly getting enlightened. And I'm not suggesting you're separate points. Now, you started talking about rain.
Yeah.
And the difference between the Buddhistic paradigm, let's say, and the psychotherapeutic paradigm. Right. And I just want to be clear about the two, the differences as well as the limitations of each one. I'm not denying the value of therapy and everything that, you know, many people have been talking about. Not at all. I see tremendous value in that. But just to kind of play the devil's advocate here, coming more from the Buddhistic or spiritual, Advaita, whatever, perspective. See, one of my teachers as well, Christopher Titmus, some of you know him, he's not a particularly big fan of psychotherapy, as you know, those of you who know him.
He went to psychotherapy. Anyway.
Okay. He tends to be a bit dismissive of things like healing the wounded child, etc., etc. And as Petra was mentioning earlier as well, that there are a few examples of people who are psychologically very fucked up, but suddenly waking up just through the realization that this is not who I am. So from that perspective, this the paradigm is very much one of disbelief, not believing the story and not identifying with it. And I remember one time in an inquiry that I had with Christopher, when he on this very subject, and he was kind of a little bit, well, not very supportive, let's say, of the psychotherapeutic approach. And he made a comment, why build something up only to tear it down? So this seems to me to be one of the limitations of the therapeutic approach, that even though it has great value, and certainly I see the value in it, but as Justin was saying, that he didn't even realize how much stuff he had, and you just keep digging it up and digging it up and digging it up. So what's the point of digging up more and more and more? And there's always more to dig up. There's always more to dig up. What's the point of digging up more and more if we don't make that vital quantum leap into seeing this is not who I am? So would you say, or would you agree, that this is one of the limitations of the psychotherapeutic paradigm?
No, I wouldn't say it's a limitation. You know, it's a question from much of my way of thinking, or kind of what's needed, and situations are always different. Ramana Maharshi said something somewhere. He said, you know, you just ask, who am I? And he said, like, when you're throwing out the garbage, you don't go and inspect everything before you throw it into the garbage bin. You just empty the, you know, the garbage into the big garbage bin. Fair enough if you can do it. Certainly. I think often the problem is that people start adopting positions. You get psychotherapists who are saying, all this spiritual stuff is all just an escape. And anyway, you know, they've got to work through their stuff before they can really, even if they do believe in spirituality, you've got to work through all your stuff before you can get anywhere. That's kind of one extreme. And then you get the others who say, no, psychotherapy is just making matters worse, so it's totally unnecessary. People are kind of adopting positions, whereas I think if we take, my personal feeling is, if we take like, you know, try to be a bit open and see what's going on, sometimes it seems one thing's necessary, another time the other, maybe a combination. I think it varies the whole time. That's my experience. So I think we can't, in my experience, we can't really generalize.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, maybe somebody who hasn't had a chance to speak so much before. Oh, is that all right, Justin? Was there someone who...
Yeah. That's the situation. Somehow knew something which I didn't know, a traumatic thing from the past, and really triggered that in order to block my way of life. So in kind of way then things came in, and it was not possible somehow to stay in that space, to be in that space and not identify with that, only to see the energy and whatever it is, how it's coming, going, impermanent, and that's not me. So somehow I try to deal with these situations, and actually it was not possible. And in this situation somehow, there's somehow in between, I'm a little bit in between there. I see, I have the feeling, you know, in case we want to get somehow to this goal, maybe the psychoanalytical area has not maybe the aim of that. It's another kind of goal for that topic at all. But so somehow identification kicked in again, so can I say. So for years something different, but then it was so overwhelming that I was there, me. and so something figured out. It was not possible for me to drop it or whatever. It was so forceful. It was so overwhelming. It was like energetically. Something entered the body and really.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then the tricky thing is now coming. I was here running around in Asia, this and that, and somehow I could see, no, I have to go back somehow on the personal level. I didn't know anything about that. But I had some help at home with others who knew some things. And then the tricky thing now is exactly that. Only use it as far as it useful as a tool to make the thing soft enough somehow to go back into the other thing again.
And the other thing being?
Me, the spiritual thing or the transcendental thing.
Yeah.
Because there's also, I can see in that field also strong attachment to these things. Even when I have solved my issues with these tools, I get so attached to the tools. Now, when, you know, another 100 incarnation to be the guy with all the tools to share or whatever. So, and it's actually first me. Always about me. That's a tricky thing. I have also no solution to that. I see it also on some people seemingly get stuck there.
Yeah.
And they go then forever trying to figure out everything they have, they can see. Because they have many tools, they see also more, they can more solve issues and whatever. So it's a very tricky thing to go in there. But not getting too attached to that.
Getting attached,
That's somehow an issue. Very, very, very tricky to manage.
Well, where I come from in Norway, it's the only country in the world where psychotherapy, either long-term or short-term, is totally subsidised by the state. So it's not a question of if you've got money or not. But there is like this psychotherapeutic culture, like California, and like Woody Allen, the last time I heard him say, you've been in psychoanalysis for 15 years. That was quite a few years ago. And apparently, you know, I think he just loves it. And what's more, he thinks that spirituality is total nonsense. Fair enough. So I agree with you. Yeah, you can get kind of hooked on it, as it were. And just keep on and on and on, sort of going more and more into personal stuff the whole time. And it can be an endless thing. But with most people, my feeling is, and my own feeling is, that, you know, no, now I don't want to go in any more therapy. But
escape somehow.
Eh? Well, it, sorry.
An escape from the therapy, go back into my cave somehow and avoid to see the things.
No. Does it feel like that for you? I mean, I'm not, you know, you don't have to answer, but I mean, does it feel like that?
For you me, know? No.
Oh, fair enough.
I have the feeling now it's time to let go of these otherwise identification so much that there's also no benefit anymore. So it's, what I give into it is not benefiting enough somehow.
Yeah. I'd like to say something personal, you know, on a personal note, and that is for me, and I'm talking about me, but for me, without going into the details, I had a pretty rough childhood, and that's, you know, often the reason why people become psychologists and psychiatrists, you know, they really want to, you know, they're interested in themselves. And so I had a rough start, but anyway, I got things sorted out, but it took quite a long while, but I think without the psychotherapeutic work that I did, I think it would have taken me a lot more time on the spiritual part. So for me, it's been a way of, you know, of helping me along the spiritual path, because I've got sorted out a lot of stuff which I don't sort of need to keep going into over and over again, as it were, on, you know, in meditation on the spiritual path. Yeah, please, there was some down there.
I just want to share some thoughts, reflections that come out from our talking today. psychology, psychoanalysis,
uh-huh.
as if these two parties do not really meet or they have very little place to meet. And I would like to suggest rather a different view on this.
Mm-hmm.
Something that is more, I would say, holistic.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we really talk when we talk about going to therapy, dealing with our own stuff. I mean, what are we doing when we sit in meditation?
Exactly.
It's dealing with our own stuff.
Yeah.
But where really is the border?
Mm.
Is it because somebody else is there and you sort of reflect something back to us and then it's in the relationship? Well, you know, it's a bit, I would say, tricky here. Because it's like, it's one, I'm not sure I'm making it myself.
Yeah, I see.
The English doesn't come.
No, I think I understand what you're saying. I mean, maybe my answer will, you know, whether I've understood you or not. You say if you don't think I've understood you. First thing I'd like to say is, you know, from a transpersonal psychological perspective, there is a continuity. You know, there are just different sort of levels. It's just a lot of psychiatrists or psychotherapists aren't aware of this. And particularly the more traditional ones, that's one thing. And the other thing is kind of maybe, as it were, who's sort of working. I think you can get in a muddle if you're going to sit there like as a psychotherapist and try to sort of be kind of putting a lot of your spiritual ideas onto somebody. But on the other hand, I think it's very important to be open. For example, Jung was very open. Gustav Jung was very open to this, and he saw this very deeply. So I think again, it's difficult to generalize, and certainly I don't think like you have like personal psychology or ego psychology, self psychology, and then the transpersonal stuff is something else. But they kind of merge into each other.
If what works for you in a certain moment is to be thinking about your relationship with your parents and childhood, fine.
Yeah.
This is part of spirituality, if you like.
Yeah.
It's not like different then.
Yeah.
And it's like different approaches and different tools that works at the same time. And I think it can be really useful to sort of keep the balance and say, well, now I feel like Eric was saying, now I feel this is good. So I guess what I'm trying to, the point I'm trying to get at is not making this strong split between this or that.
Mm.
It's just one thing that sometimes
I think if I've understood you correctly, that I totally agree with you. What I have just been saying is that sometimes there can be different methods. But for example, because we've been talking very much about this kind of meditation, insight meditation, watching stuff come up and so on, and then sort of trying to disidentify, you know, like you were saying. But there's a whole different a tradition also in Buddhism, we know, on the tantric, you know, Buddhist path, where actually they go into the feelings, but they do it by going into the energy, and they're working with the energy the whole time. They're working at that level, and they can come a long way with that. But then again, you can get people who get very categorical about that. And you can get like a spiritual teacher, like a tantric teacher, who, you know, who's sort of stopping somebody for going into psychotherapy, who maybe themselves wants to do it because the tantric master wants me to do it himself. You know, so you get kind of, that's just a whole kind of, I wouldn't necessarily, they're not necessarily ego trips, they're certainly kind of strong opinions on both sides. But I think, generally speaking, you know, it is one huge area that we just have kind of see what seems to be suitable according to the circumstances and not have too many dogmatic opinions about it. But at the same time, be aware there are certain concrete things we ought to know about.
Yeah.
just like one sentence because I feel like I had a lot of thought. It's probably too much talking, but just like three words that was in my mind all the time was like healing and love and mystery.
Yeah.
And like my feeling is that like for Lorna question, okay, the question from my experience was like, and also friends of mine was asking, I think, Jack Kornfield once, when he came to Israel about it, he said, like...
Well, Jack Kornfield?
Yeah. Everything that you feel that will help diminish the suffering, heal you and open you to love, like, grab it with two hands, and that's kind of my answer to...
Sounds like wise words.
Like, I was, like, I was hearing Christopher Titmus saying these things in the days when he used to, and being, like, 20, and I was like, oh, if Christopher said I shouldn't go to therapy, and it took me, like, a long time to do it, and I think, like, what Jay was saying, that, like, we can get stuck, like, there's some energetic nets that can stay for a long time, so just, like, if what we're doing is opening ourselves to love, and everywhere, like Lila was saying, it's very important. And from, like, being a social worker and working with, like the worst cases that you mentioned, I feel like that we are very lucky that meditation worked for us. And it's a tool that we can use. Because, like, many people just can't use this tool. It's just, like, working, doing meditation in jail. People would sit and just have, like, all their life in their face. It's just overwhelming. So, like, I really feel like that. A lot of gratitude to meditation. And, like, about healing, I just feel from doing social work that healing can come in so many ways. Like, with the kids I was working, like, taking them, like, I'd start, try to speak with them, try to speak, like, and then taking them to the garden, working in the garden, and just, like, magic happens. They will run to see the strawberries. And I think for us here, it's the same. Like, when we... healing the peas and whatever we're doing, like healing coming in many ways. So that kind of mystery.
Definitely. Thank you. Thanks. Yes, please.
Can I just say I find it very helpful to hear what you were saying and like what everybody was saying. It feels very helpful to hear.
Thank you. I'd like to thank everybody for, you know, we've had a nice sharing discussion. Nobody seems to have the answer. And that is, I think, is the answer. So thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Should we...